This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, September 12th, 2012. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums. KUAF is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture.
The KUAF website giveaway offers 2 3-day passes plus camping to the Yonder Mountain String Band's Harvest Music Festival. It takes place October 11th, 12th, and 13th on Mulberry Mountain in Ozark. Performers include Yonder Mountain String Band, the Mickey Hart Band, Leftover Salmon, and more. Artist-led workshops, vendors, and outdoor activities will be offered. The drawing is scheduled for Friday, September 28th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com for more information.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, how the Fort Smith landfill paid off the mortgage, discovered forgotten history, and built a park.
Plus, we check in with the co-founders of the Fayetteville Flyer to see how they're enjoying their new office and more. But first, Governor Mike Beebe will pursue expanding Medicaid eligibility in Arkansas under the federal health care law. Spokesman Matt DeCampbell says it comes after getting assurances that the state could back out later.
The Department of Health and Human Services, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services that oversees the program, sent us a letter giving us the flexibility to do that, saying in writing, as Governor Beebe wanted to see, that we do not have to keep the expansion down the road if budget necessity causes us to back out of it.
Under the federal health care law, the federal government would pay the full cost for the expansion when it begins in 2014. But after 3 years, the state would begin gradually paying an increasing share until it reaches 10%. Governor Beebe would still need approval from the state legislature, but is hoping he can sway some minds by showing an increase in the number of Arkansans who will have coverage. DeCampbell says it would also help hospitals, especially in rural areas, by reducing the number of patients they must treat who don't have any form of health care coverage.
Tomorrow, a new Goodwill store will open in Fayetteville, located next to the Fiesta Square Shopping Center in a building that until recently was home to an Aldi grocery store. The location will feature donation collections, retail sales, and a career services center. Rebecca Brockman, a Goodwill representative, says the career centers are widely used.
In the last fiscal year, which ended in June, we had almost 2,500 people who sought services from our Goodwill career centers in Springdale and Fayetteville. And then we were able to place almost 480 people into employment. So there are a lot of people that are in need of jobs or in need of help finding employment and just help in their career path.
Career counselors staff the center, and they are asked to help anyone who comes into the center looking for help finding a job.
People come from a variety of walks of life. Maybe they're just starting out on their job search, or they've been out of work for a couple of years, and the career counselor will be able to meet with them and kind of find out where they are and then get them on the right path.
Services offered by the counselors include resume preparation, interview coaching, and help with continuing adult education. In addition to career centers, Goodwill takes donations of gently used clothing, shoes, household items, and even electronics and e-waste.
We have collected almost 1 million pounds of e-waste since the program started in 2009. And when you drop off a computer, it's used in a variety of ways. It can be used for training purposes, and then we recycle most of the products. We have a partnership with Dell, and we package the recyclable material and send it back to them.
Goodwill will host a grand opening for the new store tomorrow through Sunday.
Recently approved plans by Fayetteville's Streets Committee to expand sidewalks along a downtown street have been abandoned after the city attorney has expressed concern about the intent of the project. As you may recall, the Streets Committee voted last month to install an expanded sidewalk along the south side of Center Street, making room for more street furniture and for potential sidewalk cafe-style accommodations. The issue was brought before the committee at the request of restaurant owners on the street. Though work was to have already started on the project, City Attorney Kit Williams halted the project because he is concerned public funds would be going toward private purposes.
My concern is that we would be taking public dollars to convert public space for private purposes, for private seating for these restaurants. And, of course, taxes must be used for public purposes. And according to our Constitution, cannot be diverted and be used for a private purpose. And the same thing's really with city property. I don't think you can intentionally just build outdoor seating for restaurants with tax dollars, which it seems like this is what the proposal kind of entailed.
Although it may be unlawful to use tax money to convert public space to private space, Williams says there are still ways to provide the outdoor dining space that restaurants want.
There are ways that we possibly could do this if the restaurants are willing to pay instead of asking the taxpayers to pay. And so it is possible that we could work into leases with them and other ways so that the sidewalk could be extended, but it can't be extended purely on the taxpayer's tab. It has to be, if the restaurants are going to use it, then they need to pay for the increased floor space, increased seating that they're going to be able to use privately.
The issue was discussed at last night's City Streets Committee meeting. The committee voted 3-1 to abandon the project in favor of the original design, which would involve constructing new standard-width sidewalks, which would in turn result in no loss of parking on the street.
Students eager to see the Razorback football team play this Saturday against the number one team in America, Alabama, have some good news. Yesterday, the university announced that camping outside of Reynolds Razorback Stadium will be permitted for the game. Camping will begin at 6 p.m. sharp tomorrow night, at which time registration will begin. Students wanting to camp are required to register with up to 10 campers per tent. All camping equipment must be removed by 9 Saturday morning. The full list of camping guidelines and restrictions can be found on the university's website at newswire.uark.edu.
U.S. News and World Reports today released its 2013 list of college rankings. The U of A ranked 9th on the publication's list of up-and-coming national public universities. Ranked 14th among all up-and-coming national universities, the UA was ranked 134th on the publication's national university ratings. Four other schools are tied for the 134th spot, including Colorado State University in Fort Collins and Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. The overall list rated 270 public and private national universities. John Brown University in Siloam Springs was also ranked by the publication. JBU was ranked 2nd on the publication's list of regional colleges in the South.
Students, staff, and other people finding themselves on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville and craving a nicotine bump should reconsider before striking up a smoke. Although it has technically been illegal to smoke on campus for over 2 years, Lieutenant Gary Crane of the U of A Police Department says mostly warnings have been issued to people caught smoking in the past 2 years.
You know, for a long period of time, there was just mostly warnings being given so that people would be aware of the new law. That time now is come to a point where probably more citations are going to be issued as opposed to warnings.
If caught smoking on campus, a ticket could cost violators between $1 and $500. Lieutenant Crane says if ticketed, violators are required to go to court, and it is the judge who sets the ticket amount. According to 2009 state law, the smoking ban applies to all state-supported institutions of higher education.
Two Razorback women's cross-country team members have been recognized for their weekend performance at the Adidas University of California Irvine Invitational. In addition, the team is now ranked 9th in the country. The Razorback women's golf team had a busy Tuesday. The team pushed to the top of the leaderboard after the second round of competition in the Old Waverly Invitational. The final round of the tournament takes place today in West Point, Mississippi.
Tonight, clear conditions, lows in the lower to mid-60s and a 20% chance of rain. Tomorrow, clear early, then turning partly cloudy. Eventually, a 30% chance of rain and thunderstorms. Highs will be in the mid-80s in northwest Arkansas. Mostly cloudy for the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow with a 20% chance of rain and highs in the lower 90s. And for tomorrow night, overcast, 50% chance of rain, lows in the mid-50s in northwest Arkansas, mid-60s tomorrow night for the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. We expect certain parts of our lives to work like clockwork, set the trash and recycling out at night, and by the same time the next day, it's been hauled away. But from the curb to the landfill, a lot happens. Just ask Baridi Nokokeli, the director of the Fort Smith Department of Sanitation.
So I'm going to take you over here to the working face of the landfill.
Baridi loves giving behind-the-scenes tours of the Fort Smith Sanitary Landfill, as he did late last month in his SUV. The winds that afternoon had picked up as Isaac approached Arkansas, and the conditions were such that it was better to drive than walk. Such tours at the landfill are not uncommon. Last year, Baridi says, more than 2,000 people had a similar guided journey around the landfill's campus. Baridi, who has been the director of the department for the past 7 years, says he wants his guests to come away with a better idea of the science and engineering involved in trash.
Especially in the mode of environmental concerns, because we want to ensure that they understand a lot of people put out their waste, their trash at the curb before they go to school and they go to work. And then they come back and they retrieve the empty container. No one really thinks about the in-between. Well, we like to show them the in-between. We like to show them the life that their trash takes, the journey that it takes in effect.
And a lot happens here. The publicly owned facility, the largest in the state, serves about 400,000 people in Fort Smith, Sebastian County, and the counties bordering Sebastian. The landfill is open 6 days a week, 314 days a year, and last year accepted 300,000 tons of solid waste. Much of that waste is taken to what Baridi calls the working face of the landfill, but not all of it. Household hazardous waste and white goods like refrigerators and air conditioners are taken for no extra charge and disposed of properly. The white goods are separated, and after licensed employees extract the CFCs in those units, the scrap metal is hauled away by companies, and the landfill receives a percentage of the sales. This isn't a dump where refuse is simply thrown away.
Instead of this area or this landfill being a dead end for waste, it's a point of transition where things can actually be recycled and returned and reused in the environment. Beneficial reuse.
Similarly, yard waste is turned around too. More than 7,200 tons of yard waste was brought to the landfill last year, and the resulting compost, about 1,400 yards, sold back to the public at $10 per yard. That's about 300 pounds per $10 bill. But the rest, the trash that does need to stay at the landfill, it meets the compactor. The blue vehicle with spiked wheels is the rock star of the landfill. Every piece of trash that can't be repurposed is taken to the working face of the campus and crushed below the compactor's medieval-like tires. The vehicle's sheer size, as Baridi describes it, is densifying the waste.
It is densifying it by going back and forth and is crushing out or smashing out all the voids and all the moisture. So all it's doing is densifying as much waste into the smallest area possible.
The process means about 2,000 pounds of trash can be compacted into an area of 3 cubic yards, thus drastically minimizing the rate of expansion of the landfill. At the end of every day, the trash brought in and smashed to the consistency of concrete must be, by law, covered with 6 inches of topsoil collected elsewhere in the landfill. Every day. Reedy uses an unexpected comparison to explain what happens here.
But if you could just imagine that a sanitary landfill is nothing more than an in-ground pool. What we do is we dig out an area and we dig it out below grade, and then we line that area just like you would a concrete pool or even an above-ground pool. And what a landfill does is, in effect, just as you would do if you were going to bury a loved one, a family member, we entomb it in somewhat like a casket where we line that large pit area, and we put membrane liners, composite liners. We have about 3 feet of clay, and we actually have a collection system for contaminated water, which we refer to as leachate.
There are regulations to how much standing water can be under all of the waste that's entombed at the landfill, no more than 6 inches. The water is drawn out at the Fort Smith Sanitary Landfill regularly to protect groundwater and aquifers below the surface. And something else is drawn out as well, methane gas.
This is our methane gas processing facility. Now, some of your listeners may know that methane gas and may be aware that methane gas, of course, is a byproduct of the decomposing waste. Well, in the past, we were taking that unprocessed gas and we were selling it to Max Steel and Owings Corning. Max Steel was using it to melt their steel as a fuel gas, and so was Owings Corning for some of their products.
But a few years ago, Baridi figured they could do even better and convinced a company called South Tex Treaters to build a high-grade processing facility on the Fort Smith landfill site.
We're processing our methane gas to pipeline-grade quality, and we're selling it to AOG, Arkansas-Oklahoma Gas Company, and we're the only landfill to do that. So we're blending our methane gas in their pipeline. A lot of people may not be aware of this. It's a natural gas. And in fact, what we refer to as natural gas, 50% of natural gas is methane. So we're actually selling our methane gas to AOG, and people are always surprised to find that they're heating their homes and cooking their meals on gas derived in part from the Fort Smith landfill.
That pipeline quality gas is produced at a rate nearing 3 million linear feet every 24 hours that's sold at market rate, about $100,000 a month in gross sales. The landfill's take is 10% of that. Though the landfill is publicly owned, it's operated in a privately owned manner. Baridi says no property or sales tax money is directed to the landfill, and the operation is now self-sustaining. The mortgage paid off last year. It operates solely on the revenues and fees it collects. Baridi is quite proud of the innovations, but as he drives his SUV to an overlook, that's right, the landfill has an overlook on the tour so visitors can see the entire operation and the Poteau Mountains in the distance. As he goes to the overlook, he explains what happens here is permanent.
Now, one thing about landfills, although we are running the most efficient sanitary landfill in this state, and although I've been in this business now for 34 years, I will say this. Landfills, by their very nature, are abhorrent to nature. And although this is the most inexpensive, most efficient method for waste disposal, which is burial, and we have land in abundance in Arkansas being the natural state, anything that we actually landfill back with waste has no other use other than for waste disposal.
Baridi says the business model at the landfill is to protect resources, so he preaches the gospel of waste reduction and recycling to schools, civic groups, anybody who will listen. He says he's proud that though the landfill is the largest by land permitted in the state, it's third in the volume of waste, and he'd like to see that amount diminish each year.
Hold on, we're in a four-wheel drive, so we might as well have a little fun in our four-wheel drive.
Any really exciting tour includes something unexpected. And on the boundary of the landfill, terrain that was once part of Fort Chaffee, there's a piece of forgotten history that was unearthed when Chaffee officials began surveying for a walking trail.
And they had mentioned to us that there are site maps show that there is a bridge out here. Well, we didn't see a bridge. We didn't know that there was a bridge out here, so we came out to take a look, and I can see you're looking, and you don't see it yet.
I don't see it now.
Well, this is the bridge. There it is.
How about that?
Yes, and that is a bridge from the WPA.
Built in 1941 and still in pristine condition, despite decades of exposure in the wooded area. Baridi says there's also a practice machine gun turret somewhere nearby that he also plans to uncover. But if you're looking for something unexpected at the landfill, you don't need a guided tour in an SUV. There's a park, complete with playground equipment and picnic tables, at the landfill's entrance.
This was a mosquito-infested swamp-like area. Had standing water that was foul-smelling. It was a catch-all for all the debris that was blowing off the trucks as they entered and exited the landfill. And I thought we could do something to demonstrate the efficiency of a landfill. And I thought that the way this area looked, it didn't help us in that regard.
For 2 years, the employees built the park out of recycled material. Old street lights provide the metal for the benches and the seesaws. The lumber and stone came from trees felled and rock quarried at the landfill in the normal course of business. The trees in the park are identified with their common and Latin names. The walking trail is a third of a mile. Spend an afternoon with Baridi and you'll understand that he loves his business, a business he never thought he'd make his life's work when he began as a sanitation worker in Houston to pay for college in the late 1970s.
And even though I had started and was somewhat ashamed to be working as a sanitation worker, I was reminded by some of the older guys that it was just 10 years earlier that Dr. King had given his life, inadvertently, representing sanitation workers in Memphis, Tennessee. In 1968. So I just kept that in mind, that here was 1978, 10 years later, and if it was good enough, if sanitation workers were good enough for Dr. King to come and represent during their strike and their working conditions for better working conditions, and in fact lost his life there, the least I could do is have some pride and admiration for what we were doing. And I've been in ever since. So not only did I get myself through college, I also was able to put my sister through college, my brother through college, and also subsidize my brother's medical school, and he's a practice physician today. And I did all that through solid waste management.
Baridi is perhaps proudest of the fact that the Fort Smith Sanitary Landfill has not asked for a rate increase for 5 years.
And in fact, I will be approaching the board of directors next year, about mid-2013, to offer a rate decrease to our customers. That's right. The efficiency of automated collection is such that we are going to pass on savings to the citizens. So I know it might sound crazy, but we're actually going to be offering a rate decrease of at least $1.10 per month.
Baridi Nokokele is the director of the Fort Smith Department of Sanitation. If you want to know more about the landfill, you can find a link on our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
It's becoming easier and easier to access news on the internet. If you've searched for news specific to Fayetteville, you've probably run across FayettevilleFlyer.com. Since launching in 2007, the Flyer has grown to receive more than 150,000 page views per month, which makes it one of the fastest growing websites in the area. Co-founder Todd Gill says the Flyer's staff began a push in 2010 to double their website traffic from 1 million to 2 million page views annually. Todd says the Flyer is on track to hit 1.9 million views by the end of this year. With all of the recent growth at the Fayetteville Flyer, it seemed like a good time to catch up with Todd and the Fayetteville Flyer's other co-founder, Dustin Bartholomew. One of the most recent changes for the two-man operation is a change in location. The Flyer office has moved from Mountain Street in downtown Fayetteville to an office space located near the corner of College Avenue and Spring Street in Fayetteville. As you walk into the new office, you'll probably be greeted by Todd's white Bichon named Sadie, who likes to scamper across the wooden floors of her new 700-square-foot home. Todd says at the Flyer's previous location, the staff was basically sitting on top of each other because the office was only 180 square feet.
I'm just happy to be able to stretch my legs for now. You know, when we found this space, we were looking because we thought our rent was going to be raised on our old space. We found this space, it was big, there was a guy trying to get out of it, so we were able to sublease it for the first month. We got so excited about it, and then come to find out our landlord had absolutely no plans to increase our rent, so we were left with this decision of there's really no real reason to move, but if we did, we'd have some more space, we'd be able to grow if the opportunity arose, and so we just ran with it. So that's how we ended up here.
Taking an idea and running with it seems to be the way the Fayetteville Flyer initially got its start as well. The duo says they started the Flyer as a hobby blog in 2007 when they were working at ad agencies. They would cover news events in their spare time, and a year later, they began getting requests from local businesses who wanted to advertise on the site. Todd says the response was overwhelming enough that they quit their jobs and began working on the Flyer full time. Viewership has increased since then, and that could be in part because the content is free.
Everybody knows that the two newspapers here merged a couple years ago, meaning that there's a big opportunity. When you go from two newsrooms to one newsroom, well, there's certainly an opportunity for a second newsroom. And another opportunity that came out of that was that particular newsroom's content is now behind a paywall. So pretty much the first person out of the gate that could provide professional style local reporting without a paywall was set for success pretty much from the beginning. And we had already had a jump, a head start on traffic as it is. So we started going to A&P commission meetings, city council meetings, and covering as much as we could. And it's resulted in almost a doubling of our traffic.
I also think the focus on just one city in the Northwest Arkansas market. Everybody, a lot of other outlets try to cover the whole region, and that would be a challenge for us. We thought it was important to focus on a smaller geographic area. So we focused on just Fayetteville, and I think that has really been something that's resonated with readers who might not, certainly you're, as a human, you're predisposed to care more about what's immediately surrounding you. So I think that's really helped too.
Although they are a small staff, they say their skill sets overlap nicely. Todd earned a degree in advertising and public relations from the University of Arkansas's Journalism Department. He worked for an ad agency for a decade and is adept with web design and marketing skills. Dustin earned a degree in creative writing and is able to help with sales. While the Flyer is only a two-man band, there are advantages to having a small staff.
Well, when you come up with an idea, you can basically implement it immediately. You certainly don't have to cut through any tape to get something done. That has its drawbacks. You can make a mistake really easily, which we have done, but you know, you learn from your mistakes. I like being in charge of ourselves. I like being able to implement a new idea, especially when new things are always being thrown at you in terms of new media and online stuff. Instagram. At my old job, if we were to have started an Instagram account, it would have taken me months to get approval to do something like that. But Dustin and I can just sit down, talk about it, and then have it done in, you know, that afternoon. So it's really fun.
Yeah, I would say that's the biggest advantage, is just being able to do something quickly, you know, just to be able to see something, make a decision, and implement it immediately. I mean, that's one of the biggest things. It's just nice to be able to do what you think you should do without having to, just get approval from somebody else, you know.
Speaking of Instagram, Todd says they have been able to use the photo sharing service as a way to get extra content on their site. They have done such a good job that they were recognized by a creator of Instagram. Just last year, a website called Simply Zesty added the flyer to its list of 10 amazing accounts to follow on Instagram. The flyer earned the distinction for its coverage of local news. While photos often accompany a story, the bulk of the site's content is text. The amount of stories posted vary from day to day, but the staff covers a variety of topics, including news, arts, sports, and features. Todd says what content is posted to the site is often a matter of what he and Dustin can find time to get to.
There are times when there's a school board meeting going on at the same time as, you know, some kind of charrette at City Hall, and it's just literally we have to pick our battles. You know, we'd love to expand coverage of crime, of education, their planning commission, and other things that we don't get to. So we kind of pick our own beats. City Council first and foremost, A&P Commission, right up there behind it. So that kind of helps dictate what we cover. But yeah, we're certainly limited.
Yeah, vacation's that's a hard thing. whenever we want to take a day off, it's difficult. That doesn't really happen all that often. So those are some of the challenges.
As long as we're somewhere with internet access,
right?
I guess we aren't really ever on vacation.
But it's also that way for any small business owner, which is really what we are. We are small business owners, and so I think, that's possibly why we connect with other small business owners, because we feel their pain. We know what it's like to be small and to have to do it yourself. So,
many of those local business owners are sponsors of the Fayetteville Flyer. The staff recognizes them on its website and even requests that readers support the sponsors, because without them, there would be no Fayetteville Flyer. While it seems like good business sense to support the local community that supports you, it's obvious that both Todd and Dustin have a true passion for their jobs and love the city they live in.
I've lived here since the first grade. Dustin was born at Washington Regional in college, so, you know, this is the place to be in Northwest Arkansas. In my opinion, it's the place to be in Arkansas, and even in the South. And it's the place everybody comes to, falls in love with, and has this tremendously hard time leaving. And when you do leave, you're just magnetized and you end up right back here. So it's a great place. There's always stuff going on. And it makes covering it really easy. It makes going to a press conference about, you know, some improvements on the sidewalks exciting, because I'm literally going to get to walk along those sidewalks when I go to dinner next week. So it's, I don't know, I love this place. I think you do too.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's one of the reasons we started it, is there should be a Fayetteville website that talks about Fayetteville stuff and just Fayetteville stuff. You know, don't filter out all everything else. I just want to know what's happening in Fayetteville. I want to know what bands are playing, and I want to know what's happening in the city. I want to know what day to put my trash out. You know, I just want to give me a Fayetteville site, and it should exist. So that's why we made it.
With the new office, Todd and Dustin say there are possibilities for growth. But as of now, there are no more immediate plans for what comes next.
I think we have grown this business so organically. I think we'll continue to do it that way. You know, I think we'll continue to grow it as we see fit. So I think that this, our, you know, a new office offers us the ability to grow where we didn't have that ability before. And that's kind of nice right now, just knowing that we can. So we're not quite ready to add staff or anything yet, but we have the possibility, and that's comforting.
More information is available at FayettevilleFlyer.com.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we preview the 27th annual King Biscuit Blues Festival that happens in Helena, Arkansas, October 4th through the 6th. Headliners Bobby Rush, Taj Mahal, and Bonnie Raitt. And that just scratches the surface. Check out KingBiscuitBluesFestival.com. That's the Generic Blues Show every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
It is Wednesday, September 12th, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin-Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
We have hit that time of year, apparently, because we have lots to do. Today is drawing in the galleries, drawing the sculpture of Robert Indiana and Deborah Butterfield. That's from 3:30 to 5 or 6 to 7:30 at Crystal Bridges.
Gotcha.
The Sci-Fi Book Club meets at the Bella Vista Library at 6 o'clock to talk about Mystic and Writer by Sharon Shin. There's a movie screening tonight at the Fayetteville Public Library. It's an advance for a University of Arkansas symposium, The Legacy of Friedrich Gerstacker. And the film is called Children of the Mother Beaver.
I kind of want to see this.
It's about an hour long, it looks like, from what I've read about it. 6:30 at the Fayetteville Public Library. And the Vine Brothers, Joe Credit and Greg Bucking, are going to be playing in Northwest Arkansas. They are from Kansas City and Brooklyn. They're Americana roots. They have an album called Low Rent. And they play tonight at 7 at Tanglewood Branch Beer Company.
Fun.
6 o'clock tomorrow at Sound Warehouse in Fayetteville. And 8 o'clock tomorrow at Mojo's Pints and Pies.
They're doing a Fayetteville tour.
Well, they've already done a Eureka tour, and now they're doing a Fayetteville tour.
I like it. I like these micro tours.
Well, and if you haven't been to Tanglewood, we can all jump up and down and enthusiastically suggest you go there.
Yes.
You can find out more at thevinebrothers.com.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
There are those people that when they answer the simple question, what happened? Magic occurs. All of a sudden, we're not living in our world anymore. We're living in theirs. On the next Snap Judgment, from NPR and PRX, we proudly present The Storyteller. Snap Judgment, do not miss it.
Snap Judgment, Saturday afternoons at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
The Botanical Garden of the Ozarks presents Chefs in the Garden Thursday, September 13th from 6 to 8:30 p.m. This annual outdoor fundraiser offers cooking demonstrations, samplings from a variety of area restaurants, and a wine tasting. Tickets and more information are available at bgozarks.org or 750-2620.
The KUAF website giveaway and Walton Art Center offering you the chance to win two tickets to the 10x10 art series. Productions include Plena Libre, LA Theater Works, Circa, and more. The drawing is Friday during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. Registration and information available at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Kyle Kellums.
Cat Power is a singer-songwriter whose first album debuted in 1995. Last week, she released her latest album titled Sun. Although the record is quite different from her previous work, Ozarks at Large's Katie Henriksen tells us why it's still worth listening to.
Cat Power is the musical project of one Sean Marshall, and she has a new album out called Sun, which didn't immediately win me over. Now, I can hardly stand listening to anything else. The tinny drum machine and flourishes of auto-tune freaked me out. I mean, I've been listening to Cat Power since 1998, when my roommate turned me on with Moonpix, Cat Power's first release on the indie giant Matador, which is still her label over a decade later. Back then, her music resonated a brooding and urgent melancholy, a lo-fi twang and grunge amalgam that pierced my heart. Sean Marshall was simply not a drum machine and auto-tune musician. that was completely antithetical to the raw authenticity that radiated from her mournful songs. Cat Power was born in Atlanta and is one of those few musicians whose every project I fawn over. I've seen her transformation from indie self-deprecating darling to indie diva. The first time was 2004, and I sat about 20 feet away on the hardwood floor of St. Mark's Church in the East Village of Manhattan. There, she had the opposite of stage presence, her hair falling into her face as she apologized repeatedly. There was sloppiness in her tunes that she performed on the piano, and she sang, saying things like, "Sorry, at home I have post-it notes to remind me about that." Eventually, she ended in what seemed like mid-set, stomping off apologetically and not looking at all at the audience. I keep coming back to authenticity lately and how it's such an individual decision. Much like taste, it's a judgment call we each make, but how do we make our decisions? Longtime Cat Power fans just might scream inauthenticity with Sun and its drum machines and auto-tune, all those beats. Sean has given up on art and given in to trying to make top 40. Or has she? The 11 tracks here may implement devices that suggest an inauthenticity to those of us used to both the stripped-down solo Cat Power and the Cat Power commanding a backing band of expert musicians, but each note here was invented and commanded by Sean herself. Here's the backstory to Sun according to interviews. She played some initial tracks on her guitar to a friend who told her they were too sad, too much like previous Cat Power. So she started over. Instead of finding a producer or backing band, Sean wanted to do everything herself. Though after the songs were produced, she did hire French beats wizard Philippe Zidar, who's worked with the Beastie Boys and Phoenix, to help mix the album. Instead of strumming out initial melodies on guitar, she pounded on synths and layered drum machine beats. And the result is the most blissful Cat Power yet. There's an optimism unearthed here, but one still firmly rooted in experimentation, introspection, and still singularly Cat Power. This transformation is impossible to discuss without mentioning her personal transformations that came with it, including a move from New York City to Miami, a breakup with a longtime boyfriend, and at one point, a psychotic break. There's a glowing radiance and sheen that Sean seems to have picked up from the Miami sun-soaked beaches, a bit of Art Deco pastel that never found its way into earlier Cat Power. There's a new outwardness, but still that inward that's always imbued me to Sean's music. Opener Cherokee is a fine example of this. There's a soaring in the layered, syncopated machine beats. As more layers of keys and drum machine beats come together only to break for a space-agey synth interlude that sounds a bit like flying, embellished with bird chirps and moments. It's a fugue for the 21st century, with the layers constantly spiraling inward while expanding into the cosmos. This is Bliss in the Chaos. It's a party anthem for girls who used to be comfortable only dancing alone in the privacy of their room, but now embrace the world as a dance floor. Confident, but still a little awkward. This isn't Beyoncé with its lavish studio production team and tightly choreographed moments invented to become a number one hit single. This is Sean Marshall to the core. There may be drum machines and auto-tune, but no matter how many layers, there's a simplicity and a singular minimalism. In other words, she hasn't given in to the bubblegum. Her delivery at times comes closer to a chant or spoken word than singing, as in 369, where the auto-tune makes a heavy appearance, and closer, Peace and Love, a heavy-hitting guitar and bass-drenched anthem. I'm a lover, but I'm in it to win. Peace and love.
love is a famous generation. I'm a lover, but I'm in it to win. Na 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 na.
There's an urgency there and a rawness that harkens to the cat power of yore. Yes, this is a transformed Sean Marshall and a sound I didn't immediately embrace. Once I did, I was overcome, blown away, intimidated to try and articulate anything about her new sound, which is at once raw and shiny, joyous while still embracing the intricate complexities and messiness of existence. This is a bold move by Sean, and I'm thankful for her risks. Sun is transcendent, and music that won't cease to grip me. Thank you, Sean, for making Sun. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Katie Henriksen.
We're sitting on a ruin.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Wayne Bell. He writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Fall, new television. Some of the Oscar winner contender, possible contenders might be coming out. It's also a big season for music.
Yeah. With music this fall, the Grammy cutoff is October 31st. So a lot of times albums will come out right before that to be considered. But the big push is to get the holiday money.
Right.
So.
And we're talking music is kind of. Because summer is now all about getting people to pay for tickets for live shows.
Right.
Whereas fall now, with a lot of people back in school or the vacation has expired, now it's trying to get people to buy
albums.
The music.
Well, right. And to buy albums, which, you know, that's a lost form in a way. But last week was the always exciting MTV Video Music Awards, which I watched and thought, who are these people? Like, I've become one of those people. Like, I don't know who that group is. But, you know, it was a chance for some of the acts that are coming out with new material this fall to debut some of their new material.
Who did perform? I have to admit, this is the first time in a long time I haven't seen it live nor on a rerun. I didn't see it.
You would have felt like, I'm sure, because there were a good three or four acts that won stuff, and I kept going, who are they? I didn't understand.
It's not aimed at us, though, is it?
Right. I mean, they had some people that had relatively big summers, but they also had some people returning and promoting new material. So they had Alicia Keys, who was promoting new material that's coming out this fall, Taylor Swift, Green Day, you know, some of those older bands that that I know, Pink. But then, of course, they also had a mix of people that were promoting material that had already come out, like Rihanna. And so it was, you know, it's interesting. As far as big albums coming out this fall, I mean, Taylor Swift is coming out with Red, which is her follow-up to her last album, which came out 2 years ago. And she's been on kind of a...
She hasn't been out of the spotlight, though. You can't
not really
turn around and not see something about her or see her performing on
program. Some sort of, or winning some sort of award and looking like she never knew she was going to win it.
Right. So this will be her first new music in 2 years.
Yeah, her first new music in 2 years. But that, like you said, that's kind of like saying Katy Perry put out a new album. Well, I didn't know Katy Perry wasn't still milking the last one. So, Taylor Swift, that'll be your big seller for fall, but... You know, some other stuff that's coming out, Alicia Keys, No Doubt, Pink, Green Day, all these bands that, you know, that have been around for a while, but are groups that have been around for a while are coming out with new material. And then Kanye West is coming out with a new CD in September, late September.
He seems to be an artist that still kind of puts a new one out once per year.
Yeah, and he's one of those ones that actually... Whether you love them or hate them, he puts out like a full concept album.
Right.
So that's nice. The one that's very my other half at our house is really looking forward to is Babel, which is the new CD by Mumford & Sons.
Ah.
So they're coming out with their new material at the end of September.
And that's the first in a couple of years for them.
Now, with Alicia Keys' material, she, on her last album, was really the first one of her albums that didn't really blow up. And so this could be a chance to relaunch her. She's had a baby now, so she's certainly going to have more material. She's very personal. So that should be a big album for fall.
When does that come out?
That's going to come out in November.
Okay.
And then from the countryside of things, Jason Aldean, who did well at the Grammys last year.
Didn't
got a lot
he play
of nominations.
Here recently?
I think so.
Within the last couple of years, yeah.
His comes out in October. And then some more pop things to look forward to. Eli Golding comes out with her album, and her current song, Lights,
mm-hmm.
has been big all over the charts. So this will be her big album. And Kesha, your favorite, at some point this fall is going to come out with her album.
All right. And then surely for those of us who kind of pay attention to
who
people.
Who look forward for other music?
James Taylor, people like
that. Oh,
yeah.
Like the one I'm really looking forward to is Ryan Bingham, who, won an Oscar a couple years ago for Crazy Heart.
And please,
put out some good albums. And, yeah, he does come to George's at least mm-hmm. once every other year or so.
Yeah.
And he's got a new album coming out, so I'm really looking forward to that. If you want to steer away from the really popular big selling stuff and you want to look towards the other genres, then yeah, there's some great stuff coming.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com.
No subject was ever taboo for Christopher Hitchens. So when doctors diagnosed his stage 4 cancer 2 years ago, he wrote about being deported across the stark frontier of the land of malady, about the everyday banality of his disease, and about his own mortality. I'm Neil Conan, Carol Blue on her husband's life, death, and final book, Mortality. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation, weekday afternoons at 1 here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 12th of September, 2012. It was on this day in 1940, the cave paintings were discovered in Lascaux, France, by 4 French teenagers and their dog. They were out exploring one day, and they found the main cave, about 66 feet wide, 16 feet high, with drawings on the walls in charcoal that has been found to be about 17,000 years old, about 2,000 drawings, mostly of horses, bison, red deer, stags, some cats, extinct cattle, some human figures, geometric shapes, and the outlines of human hands, possibly the signatures of the artists. And there also appears to be a star chart, clusters of stars that resemble Taurus and the Pleiades. It's the birthday of Irénée Joliot-Curie, born in Paris, 1897. She was the daughter of Pierre and Marie Curie, homeschooled as part of an educational experiment run by her parents and their friends called the Cooperative. The adults, scientists, experts taking turns teaching one another's children. During World War I, she helped her mother operate mobile X-ray units in field hospitals, her mother Marie, who discovered radium. She began assisting her mother in the radium laboratory at the University of Paris, met a young chemical engineer named Frédéric Joliot. In 1935, the two of them won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry for artificially creating radioactive elements. And then, like her mother, Irénée Joliot-Curie developed leukemia as a result of her close work with radioactive substances and died at the age of 58. And it was on this date in 1846, Elizabeth Barrett and Robert Browning eloped. They'd been courting in secret for a year and a half through the mail, unbeknownst to her father. It all began when Robert Browning wrote Miss Barrett a fan letter saying, "I love your verses with all my heart, and I love you too." And she wrote back to him. She was an invalid. She was a heavy user of morphine. Her father did not approve of Browning. They were married on this date in 1846. She went back home afterward, stayed for 1 week, then ran off to Italy with Browning and never saw her father again. Here's a poem for today by Mary Oliver, The Swan. Across the wide waters, something comes floating, a slim and delicate ship filled with white flowers, and it moves on its miraculous muscles as though time didn't exist, as though bringing such gifts to the dry shore was a happiness almost beyond bearing. And now it turns its dark eyes, it rearranges the clouds of its wings, it trails an elaborate webbed foot the color of charcoal. Soon it will be here. Oh, what shall I do when that poppy-colored beak rests in my hand? Said Mrs. Blake of the poet, I miss my husband's company, he is so often in paradise. Of course, the path to heaven doesn't lie down in flat miles. It's in the imagination with which you perceive this world and the gestures with which you honor it. Oh, what will I do? What will I say when those white wings touch the shore? The Swan, a poem by Mary Oliver from Winter Hours, published by Houghton Mifflin and used by permission here on The Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for KUAF comes from Walton Arts Center and the 10x10 Arts Series, featuring Plena Libre on Thursday, September 20th at 7 p.m. This band, the torchbearers of Puerto Rican plena and bomba music, include a rhythm section, horns, vocals, and dance. Tickets and more information available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Jacket, Missouri.
Where in the world is Jacket, Missouri?
To get to Jacket,
Missouri.
It's in Missouri. To get to Jacket, Missouri, first go to downtown Pea Ridge.
Okay.
Then head due north on Highway 265, and you'll cross the border and you'll get to Jacket.
What does due north mean anyways when people say due north?
Straight north. Straight up. Not slightly northeast, not slightly northwest. Just go straight north.
Okay.
And technically, probably you're not going to go due north. You're probably going to go a little bit northeast on this. And if you want to go to Mountain, Missouri, it's a little bit north of Jacket, also on the same highway.
Excellent.
Yes.
Maybe field trip. We'll go check out these places.
Yeah. I think they say there's a story everywhere, so I bet we could find a story in Jacket, Missouri.
There's definitely a story everywhere.
Let's see. You went to rugby yesterday.
Not to play. I wanted to. But no, I went to a rugby practice, a local team here, and interviewing them for a story that'll be coming up next week.
Right. Also, yesterday in the mail at work, I received Roy Reed's new book about, it's called Beware of Limbo Dancers.
People were pretty excited.
I'm very excited. I read the first paragraph, and then my wife took the book, and she's had it since. It's not on shelves for a couple of weeks, but
right, because we get sent.
Right. University of Arkansas Press. I'm going to try to, Roy, if you're listening, to try to get in touch with you so we can have a conversation about it before it's your readings that are scheduled in October.
Excellent.
Yes.
All right. Well, Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Kyle Kellums.
Have a great Wednesday.